No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome to the newest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. And we are a week away from a week and change away from the start of training camp for the Arizona Cardinals. And so we will have our first show of our training camp previews. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com, a USA Today wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. On the line, our co-host is Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, and he's on the show tonight, as he always is, to talk about training camp. Seth, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jess?
Doing well. I can't wait for football. Like the dead of the offseason's almost done. It's almost done. Today's Rise Up See Red podcast show is brought to you by our friends at Fan Essentials. How would you like to get all of your Cardinals or favorite NFL teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Check out FanEssentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team. Every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to. Each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear, and I'm still waiting on mine. I should get it, I think, later this week, actually. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. The price has started just $34.99, and you can visit fanessentials.net and use the promo code CRED at checkout and get 30% off your first month. Go ahead and visit fanessentials.net and get all the essentials you need. And the offer still stands. We have the opportunity. I can give one lucky listener a free month of Cards gear through FanEssentials.net. I still haven't gotten any, so if you would do that, if you are interested in a free month's work, a free box of Cardinals gear from Fan Essentials, tweet a picture of your best piece of Cardinals gear to the show Twitter at RiseUpCRed or post it to the show Facebook page, which is also RiseUpCRed. The best one will get a shout out on the next show and a free month of Fan Essentials gear. But let's go ahead and get started. And we've got a couple of things we're going to talk about tonight. We're recording on a Tuesday night. Basically, two things. One, there was a roster move that was made and a rumor of the perhaps another roster move that might come next week. The addition of a veteran cornerback, Mike Jenkins, signed officially on Tuesday. Former Dallas Cowboys first-round pick, later with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Actually, one of the corners that came into town in 2014, looking for a job, and he opted with the Tampa Bay, and the Cardinals ended up with Antonio Cromartie. That worked out well, but Mike Jenkins, now a member of the Cardinals, and a former 49ers player, Chris Culliver, a guy that you probably might recall from the times playing against the 49ers, and he is scheduled to visit next week. We'll talk a little bit of that in just a minute, and then we're going to go into the offensive side of training camp. We'll talk about our training camp preview. So we're going to go over the roster battles, what we're expecting to see, what surprise we might see coming up at the training camp. So let's start off, Seth, and talk about this move, Mike Jenkins. I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of him. I had to do a little research because he's a player that was off my radar completely. What do you think of this guy?
I just think it's a veteran name and somebody that's been there through training camp and preseason that they want to kind of push Justin Bethel with. But the reality with Jenkins has always been he's a good player that relied heavily on athleticism, and he's been basically injured his entire career that has sapped a lot of his athleticism. So he's not the player he was, and you never know really, honestly, what you're going to get because he's played about 30% of the available snaps the last two seasons you know, in Tampa Bay, 2014. He played in one game, I believe it was.
Yeah, torus pectoral.
Was on the injured reserve the rest of the time. And then last year, he literally played 30% of the snaps. I think it was like 301 snaps he played last season. You know, it's one of those Keim signings that everybody's going to say, you know, like, oh, this will work out, this will be great, and then he'll be cut in week three or four of training camp, and then everybody, but, you know, another veteran pickup, Chris Culver, maybe, is going to be, you know, pushing for a starting job, and people are going to forget the Mike Jenkins and just focus on Chris Culver. Kind of reminds me last year of the Alfonso Dinard signing that was, you know, going to be one of the guys pushing for playing time or starting opposite Patrick Peterson. And then did he even make training camp? I don't even remember.
I think he was gone either right at the start of training camp or right before. I can pull that up. Get those transactions.
I just see it the same type of way. Like it's one of those signings. If it works out early, great. If not, it is what it is, and they'll, you know, find somebody else.
And for me, I've been taught, you know, all offseason, when it comes to the opposite side of Justin Bethel, I've never got the feeling that they were actually looking for someone to replace him. They were looking for someone to compete with him. So they weren't going to go out and get, say, a Prince Amukamara, who is an established starter. They were always going to bring someone in who was a veteran and who has had starting experience, potentially could start, but isn't there necessarily to start, but just to give, just to give Justin Bethel that competition that they need. And it looks like right before camp, they got rid of, like, it was like they got rid of Dennard just before training camp. In fact, it was right before camp. They let it, I looked that up. And it was like, that's the type of thing we're looking for. I like, in terms of, I don't know much about how he plays, but because he's primarily an outside corner, that's good. It also, they don't, outside of Patrick Peterson, they really don't have any experience. They have really no experience. There's Peterson. They do have a couple guys in Prater and another guy on the roster. Can't remember who that is. They've got Sean Prater and another guy, but none of them, they've got a few games under their belt, a few starts. A guy like Jenkins would be a good addition. Culver, I don't like so much because we saw him in San Francisco. He wasn't all that fantastic. And and he's had off the field issues. And then in Washington, they signed him a 4-year deal. He plays in 6 games, and they cut him this offseason. He excites me even less than Jenkins, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. I wasn't impressed with – I didn't like Culver when he was in San Francisco.
I just think it's the fact that he's actually played some. Like, Jenkins hasn't even really played in 2 years. That's the thing, is 30% of snaps for a vet is not, like, that's a fringe player at that point, right? Like, yeah. And we're talking about a guy like you. I mean, you hit on it, and that was something I wrote about for tomorrow. He doesn't play in the slot, so, like, he's not technically a nickel corner because he's not playing a slot, and you're not going to ask Justin Bethel to slide into the slot, are you? Like, I haven't heard that at all. So, like, he's not really going to give you the Jerod Powers type of versatility. I don't, and honestly, like, I haven't even looked into Culver yet because I was going to wait until, like, they brought him in and everything, and, you know, what's going to happen, because I think they need a corner that can do multiple things. You know who they need is like a Jerod Powers type guy. But no, you know, I didn't write about this. Did you write about this at all? That Pro Football Focus had him on the, like, 4 or 5 best deals at cornerback heading into the season, like best value players or something like that.
Well, especially because they have the Baltimore has him playing, I think, exclusively in the slot like he did in 2014, where he was fantastic. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I haven't seen that piece yet.
And there you go. There's an article for Thursday for you.
That's the issue is that Powers, I don't know. He is, as far as now, obviously Bethel's ceiling's higher, and the way things went down in, against Carolina, I think they were ready to move on from Powers and Rashad Johnson. They were done. Especially because Tyrann Mathieu's going to play in the slot. They bring in Tyvon Branch, who, as of right now, is their slot guy. He's their Tyrann Mathieu until Tyrann Mathieu's back. And so they've already got a variety of guys who can play in the slot. So you've got Branch, you've got Mathieu, and even still, you bring in some other guys where you've got Marky Christian could do it. They really haven't had him do much other than play in deep coverage. They've had free safety so far. I'm not necessarily looking. The reason I like Jenkins is I think he's going to be a better fit in the locker room, not necessarily as to take over Justin Bethel, because I've been on the record now for months saying Justin Bethel's going to be fine. He's going to be fine this year. And when you get a number two corner, guess what? There's not a lot of great ones out there. So Justin Bethel,
no,
I think
not.
Will be-
and to be honest, they're not paying for, you know, Justin Bethel to be great. They're paying for Justin Bethel to be as good as Jerrod Powers was.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like the, you know, it's not like the bar is high, so to speak. And I think people get that misconstrued. There's only so much money that can be in picks that can be invested. Not everybody is and this isn't a shot at Steve Keim, because I think he's done an outstanding job, but not everybody is as fortunate to build a defense like the Broncos and Seahawks have, where on every level you're talking about dominant players. There's going to be holes on the Arizona Cardinals defense because they've had to plug a lot of those holes with draft picks in later round draft picks and free agency kind of fillers. They haven't been able to invest heavily in a second corner or a lead corner, for instance, in terms of Aqib Talib. You know, they didn't get a chance to draft a Von Miller type outside pass rusher, and then add at the right time a DeMarcus Ware, and then be able to develop Shaquille Barrett and Shane Ray slowly. They weren't able to draft the guy that just signed over in Jacksonville for a ton of money, but also have, and he was like a fifth round pick, but they also had a second round pick and a first round pick invested on that defensive line. And then, they were able to sign the top safety and draft a great slot corner. Like, that doesn't happen for every team. So you have to be willing to understand that there are going to be weak spots on.
And for me, the Jenkins signing is, if he makes the team, I'm not looking for him to be a starter, but he offers something. He can play outside. He has starter experience. He's played at a high level, and he's probably going to be content in a leadership role as well. So he offers kind of everything in terms of that role. If he stays healthy, he can play outside. He's done it, and he's played well, and he provides depth. I'm still looking to Justin Bethel, and I think he's more of an insurance policy, if anything else, because we look at it. Who do we want more on that Cardinals roster behind Bethel? Do we want to lean on Brandon Williams? I've thought, as much as they've talked him up, he's not going to play corner this year, and if he plays corner this year before week eight, there's going to be a lot of growing pains. So it's going to be Bethel. So we want Kerryell Brooks behind him. He was nice sometimes in the preseason last year. I'd rather Mike Jenkins back there. He's got experience. He's been to a Pro Bowl. He has had at least high athletic ability. He doesn't have the size they like. He's more built like a Jerod Powers. But if you can get a Jerod Powers type player behind Bethel for on a minimum contract, that's great.
Yeah, and that's all it is, like you said. Like, again, I think people's expectations will be too high too. Like, they're expecting Steve Keim, Jim, to, you know, to develop into a big time starter. And like I said before, and I've written about, like, he's made over 400 roster transactions. So it's not like they've all worked. I mean,
no,
like, you know, a low percentage of work, but it's one of those things. Like, if you just keep doing it, you're eventually going to get it right. And you're going to find the person, you know, the player that you need. And that's, you know, that's what the hope is here. You plug in a Mike Jenkins and maybe a Chris Colliver, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe it's not as bad looking as we think it is, with the young guys back there.
Well, and when you look at Chris Colliver in his 4 years, at in 2013, doesn't look like he must have been injured. He's only had 1 year of starting experience. Essentially, he played in 16 games, started none in his rookie year in 2012, played in 16, started six, 2014, 14, and he started the 14 games, and the last year was in six games. All I recall from Colliver, there's a guy who's got a high upside who disappoints, and in a San Francisco secondary where they really, you know, after the 2014 season, they needed talent.
He did.
They let him go. No, yeah. They didn't let they let him go to Washington for a pretty hefty contract, and they didn't make it. And so, you know, I don't know. He doesn't excite me at all. And maybe he should excite me a little bit more, but he just doesn't. He does. I know he's probably a little more athletic. He's a little bit longer, but we'll see what happens. He seems kind of one of my callings saying that he's on arrest waiting to happen.
Exactly. So
let's move on from the cornerback situation. We'll know more in the week to come. And let's talk about the training camp. So next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the offensive side of the ball for training camp. What are we excited about? What do we hope to see? What are the training camp battles, bubble players, surprises, of that sort of thing? So that's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Back on Rise Up Sea Red, we're ready to talk training camp, and we're going to look at the offensive side of the ball. So before we basically, let's kind of talk offense first and look at, now, what is it that you are looking forward to most? What are you looking forward to most that you're excited for?
I think the first thing you're excited for is just to see the new guys that they've brought in. Chandler Jones, obviously, Robert Kimdichie. You know,
those guys. We're talking offense.
Offensive side, I don't know. I mean, what more can we ask for? I think before in training camp, before the season starts, I guess we can be excited to see how the offensive line is playing. You want to see, obviously, how David Johnson is running, and is he getting that, you know, 60 to 70% of the carries and touches type thing from the backfield, you know, overall. What are they doing on offense? Because I don't know if there's, other than, you know, I don't think anything, you can see anything better than what you saw last year. Obviously, to end the year, there's obviously better. But from what they produced last year, I don't know if there's anything better that you can see. And so that makes them kind of mundane to start the season.
And for me, there's not something excited. There are a couple of players I'm excited to see. Well, one, the running back situation. Last year during training camp was injury after injury. Andre Ellington was banged up. David Johnson, you know, a couple of snaps in, he ripped off this 22-yard run. It looked great. And then comes a blame on the hamstring, bringing Chris Johnson. First day of practice, he pulls his hamstring. I want to see them stay healthy in camp, especially with David Johnson too. Can we see, is he taking the next step? Does he look as good in year two in practice as he did late in the season? And does that translate into, will we see the dynamic move, Andre Ellington? And then I'm excited. I want to see if Michael Floyd can continue what he started last year in camp. He looked like a man on a mission, and that hand injury really derailed him, but then he came on strong late. I want to see the man with the mission, Michael Floyd, in camp. And then, you know, does the right side of the offensive line look okay? That's because ultimately they need to be okay. They don't need to be great. They need to be okay. And hopefully Evan Mathis can actually be healthy.
Yeah, and I think the hard thing for me with the camp, like I'm excited more for preseason. The hard thing for camp is this, right? What happens if DJ Humphries and Evan Mathis look awful? And then we're saying, okay, well, let's just wait and see, because maybe whoever's over there, maybe it's Kim DJ and Golden, and they're just making life miserable. So that's something to be excited about from the defensive side of the ball. But then you're like, oh crap, is that offensive line bad? Like, what's going on? How are these guys so bad? And so that's what's so confusing and hard as a fan, you know, for training camp, because you're kind of like, you're rooting for your guys, you know, and DJ Humphries and Evan Mathis to be really, really good. But then you have to go on the other side and you go, oh, does that mean that, you know, that we have a problem on the defensive line? Like, they're not going to be as good as we expected. Like, oh wow, DJ Humphries is shutting down Marcus Golden in the pass rush situations. Like, did Golden regress? Like, is he not going to take the next step now? It's just such a double-edged sword in training camp. But, you know, I think you can see one thing, and I think that what we want to see as fans is the commitment to running the ball and being physical consistently. They had the ninth ranked rushing offense last year, I believe it was.
Eight.
Yeah. So top 10, I knew that much. And so you want to see that grow. And I think Evan Mathis and DJ Humphries can add to that. I'm not sure that there's a huge difference in AQ Shipley and Lyle Sinline in terms of skill level play, but I think that the surrounding parts for AQ are going to be better, and so he's going to look better by proxy.
Now, for me, you know, let's look at the roster battles. We've got a few of them. None of them, I mean, there's really only a couple of major ones. This kind of one is, who's going to be the number two receiver? And that last year went back and forth usually because of injury. Are we going to see John Brown overtake Michael Floyd, or are we going to see Michael Floyd take the next step? At center, is it going to be AQ Shipley? Is it going to be Earl Watford? Is it going to be Evan Bame? DJ Humphries, is he going to stay? The tight end position? And then it's the other, like the main roster battles are towards the end of the position groups. There's JJ Nelson. Is he going to establish himself as the number four guy? You know, is Chris Johnson going to push David Johnson for playing time? You're going to see Kerwin Williams and Elijah Penny and those guys. Can they show enough to overtake Stephon Taylor? What about Andre Ellington? So there's another, which roster battles are you looking most at?
I'm interested in a couple. I'm interested in watching Jake Coker and Matt Barkley. I want to see if Coker can force them to make a decision on Barkley, to where it's like, okay, we'd rather have Jake Coker on the practice squad than Matt Barkley on the active roster. I think that's what the battle is, more than Coker making the roster. And that's just me. Unless Coker comes out and just flat out is fantastic, which I don't think is going to happen, but you know, I think it'd be more, like I said, it's going to be, is Coker a guy we want to see the Cardinals develop, as opposed to Barkley being on the roster in case of an emergency type thing. That's one. I'm interested in what they do on the offensive line. I feel like there's seven spots that are unquestioned. And then, you know, from there, the question is, do they keep eight? Do they keep nine? If they keep only eight, who gets cut? You know, we've talked about it in the past, but, you know, you obviously have Veldier, Upati, just call it Shipley for now, Mathis and Humphreys, and then Watford and Bame are your, you know, are your first two bench guys. If they keep eight, who gets pushed off? I mean, is Toner going to get cut? That's a fifth round pick that you cut. You know, we've heard that they love Antoine McClain, but then they also gave Clay DeBoer a 3-year contract. Obviously, no money guaranteed, but you don't usually give somebody a 3-year rookie free agent, priority free agent contract, and then just cut them right away. You know, I wrote about this actually today and or on Tuesday, and you know, I said I think in the end they keep Toner and McClain. If they do keep nine, and I think they try to put DeBoer on the practice squad.
Well, and that still doesn't even talk about the guy that, you know, Arians was impressed with. He mentioned Wetzel, and they were really liked Rob Crisp. He was one of their priority free agents last year. Both are tackles as well, and that's basically the position that you're looking at is that you want another tackle on the roster, because while Watford can play tackle, he's not a tackle. Then basically you've really only got two true tackles on the roster and they're both starting. And so they're going to want another tackle on the roster. Toner, is he that guy? They list him at a guard, so I think they like him more inside than outside. So you're looking at a Crisp, a Wetzel, McClain has played more guard as well, or maybe even DeBoer. But DeBoer, you know, I think he's more of developmental because, you know, he's kind of the Nate Potter of this group.
Right, and so that's what I'm, you know, kind of interested in is how does that function? Because I don't think there's any question on the first seven. Do you like?
Oh no, I think that's a lock. We know who the we know that four of the five starters are set. That Shipley is all but going to be
it's
the pretty, starter.
It's Shipley's job to lose, basically.
And the way Aaron says, as long as he stays on the field, if he doesn't get hurt. It's going to be hard for Earl to overtake him and even harder for Bame to do it, which would be interesting. It'd be really interesting to, if Earl ended up – if Watford ended up getting that job.
Yeah, right. Because, that would be crazy.
as much as they love him, he's the guy that everyone loves but never finds a place for him in the lineup. So – But yeah, so the offensive line situation is really interesting because it looks like they've got – solid depth. The Barkley Coker thing is going to be interesting. I personally think that they're going to lean towards Barkley because the type of year it is. I think they're going to lean towards that, but I think it's going to come down to two things. So Barkley's either going to be awful or Coker's got to light things up but I completely agree with you that it's not so much a Coker for the final roster thing as it is, do we stash him on the practice squad and put another position player in, you know, maybe a ninth lineman or an extra corner if they decide to bring back Dwight Freeney, do they keep a sixth outside linebacker or do they go with Barkley?
And I think they'd like that positional flexibility. So I think they would like Coker to play well enough that if, you know, God forbid something happened in November, they'd feel comfortable with him as the backup for a week or two, you know, to activate him later, bring him up from the practice squad, as opposed to just keeping Matt Barkley inactive every week until, you know, God forbid something happens. Because that's the thing. That's what it is. Like, they're just keeping Matt Barkley inactive every week. Like, at least on a practice squad, he's not taking up an active roster spot.
Right.
I'm trying to think of anything else. Like, it's such a different – I mean, the tight ends are interesting, and the fact that they're not interesting at all. I mean, it's Darren Fells and Jermaine Gresham. And then the next question is, I think the only question is, does Troy Nicholas make this roster? I everything else I think is, because I mean, Afeni Moma is, you know, he and Gerald Christian are intriguing athletic prospects, so to speak, but I'm not sure, you know, like, do you keep them over Nicholas? Like, that, I think that's what the intrigue is. But again, we're talking about tight end three. Like, yeah, we're not even talking about tight end. I think the only reason we talk about it is because Troy Nicholas was the second round pick.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the question, do they keep three or do they keep four? We've seen on the roster, normally it's four. And so it would look like, you know, Nicholas might have that number three locked up. And it, what do they want at the fourth one? Do they want the lankier mismatched former receiver in MoMA? Do they want the versatility of an H-back in Christian? Or the undrafted kid, Hakeem Vallis, who is, based on just the athletic profile, seems to be like a younger MoMA, former receiver in college, tall, not super lengthy. What is it? I think he's 6'7", maybe 6'6", 263. So he's not huge. And, you know, he's got a little bit of speed. So I haven't heard any buzz about him, but I think he becomes a MoMA clone. So, yeah, is it?
Do they keep three?
Do they keep four?
I think he's going to be on the practice squad, so to speak. I really do.
That could be. And so does MoMA think? I think Nicholas probably at this point might be a bubble player based on where he was drafted, the fact that he's really struggled staying healthy. I think he qualifies as one of our bubble players, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so.
Offensive line, I mean, we talked about the bubble. I don't know that we really don't have really any bubble other guy other than, you know, Cole Toner's a bubble player. He's a bubble player. And I've said since they drafted him, like, I honestly, when they drafted, like, how is he going to make the team? He was the one pick I said from the start, what? That doesn't make any sense. Based on the players they already had on their roster. So, yeah, I think he's a bubble player. I mean, you've got Antoine McClain, but those are guys always in the fringe of the roster anyway. So, but that's as name as you're going to get, that their fifth round draft pick is a bubble player. Well, normally you'd think that's probably the case. The receivers, you know, the guy that everyone's been talking about this offseason is JJ Nelson. BA went out of his way to talk about, now the media went there for the offseason for mini camp and OTAs. That was one of the guys that the media, the reporters asked about him specifically. But when I had the opportunity to talk to Carson Palmer on a conference call recently before that, he's in the American Century Championship in Lake Tahoe this week. And I asked him of all the guys who were you excited to, the one guy he said, it's JJ Nelson. He showed flashes and he's had a great off season and everyone keeps talking about Nelson, and yet he's the fourth receiver.
But here's the thing. Like, so here's the crazy thing. And this might sound like out of completely left field and out of my mind and stuff. What happens if he's their third receiver? What happens if they're kind of like thinking, because I don't think it means anything, but could they be kind of phasing Floyd out? And not in the sense of like, oh, we're just not going to play him, but like, could it be in the sense of, all right, like, you know, some of the Floyd routes we're going to have, you know, JJ run now and type of stuff. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. Maybe there's gotta be a reason for it. Cause you're right. It doesn't make any sense to hype up a fourth or a fourth wide receiver in an offense.
A fourth wide receiver. This is a fourth wide receiver who was a fifth round draft pick that no one thought was going to play any receiver.
Exactly.
Because he caught 35 passes his senior year, his last year at UAB. It seems crazy, but you know, Arians, who is the, forget the quarterback guru, he's the wide receiver guru with who he's produced over the last several years.
Absolutely.
Maybe they're trying to, you know, grease the wheel a little bit for not now, but for down the line. And he's going to be the reason why the Cardinals don't bring back a Michael Floyd is because of him. Say Fitz re-ups, because if he wants to play again, he'll be the priority. They see him as potentially pairing him with John Brown for you got smoke and fire to be their speedsters out there. And you know, Michael Floyd's had injury issues. We've seen Fitz get hurt. John Brown had, you know, he missed a game last year. Maybe it's he can take the next step to be a three receiver. I mean, I'm still very hesitant to say that he's going to have that much of an impact on the team. But the way people are talking about it, that he could be, you know, when Bruce Arians says his ability to track the ball and be able to, like, over his shoulders and be able to track it, just have it just drop right in, that's a skill that not many players have. It's something special. You said you've got something special there. So I don't know. I'm excited to see what he's got, but I'm still thinking, you know, he's going to be a 30-catch guy this year if he's getting what we expect.
I'm with you. Like, I mean, if he's up in the 50s, like, that's a huge season, right? Like,
yeah, yes.
But of course, I mean, I think Floyd barely had, what, 60 last year, not even 60. So who knows? I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
So, let's talk about the receivers in their bubble players. I think now become, I think Jerome Brown is very much on the bubble, especially if JJ is going to be their number four. Can they afford to pay Jerome Brown $1.7 million to never play receiver, to be their fifth receiver and be a gunner? I think he very much is a bubble player, and we've seen as he's one of the most inconsistent practice players. He has highlight film, and then you see, what in the world are you doing? How'd you drop that? He's, you know, even saw a little bit of null or nothing. If you caught that, it was Jerron who is making some mental errors. But he's good on special teams. He's shown flashes on the field. But I think his spot on the roster is very much in doubt, especially with what you want from a fifth receiver. Britton Golden, another bubble player. And then, you know, everyone behind him, Jackson Shipley, I think has becomes a bubble. And then they've got a whole bunch of basically fake players behind them with fake names that are skinny and like that. So how likely... You know, if you have to go receiver five, who do you keep? If you're just going with five receivers, obviously the top four, we're going to assume that JJ's locked up number four. But who's the guy that you keep? Do you keep Jerron? Do you keep Britton Golden? Do you keep Jackson Shipley?
You know, that's what the hard part is, because we know what Brown is and what he can do. Where we have no idea with Jackson Shipley on game day. You know, I mean, we've seen him play in college and preseason, but is he a guy that can? Because the thing is with Brown is he kind of is the Fitz backup more than anything, right? Like, he's not necessarily the backup to John Brown or Michael Floyd, but he's the guy that if they have to do anything with Fitz, Brown's the guy that kind of plays that big slot receiver. So I don't know. That's the only question is, can Shipley fill that role? Nobody else. I mean, Britton Golden could be on the roster again, because he's been on the roster, it seems like, for the last decade. How long has he been on the roster? It does feel like forever.
He was on briefly in 2013. They got him from they got him after he was with the Bears. Then he caught that one long pass and hurt his leg, and he got an injured reserve. I didn't think he'd make the rest. I think he started on practice squad, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think Brown's the only real bubble, unless you want to consider Shipley a bubble, but wouldn't the guy have to have been like on the roster before?
Right.
Type thing. So I think Jerron Brown is the only bubble.
At the running back position, let's talk running back. Quick break. Come back on Rise Up Sea Red, and we'll talk about the last position area in running backs. Back on Rise Up Sea Red, let's talk about the running back position and some final thoughts on training camp on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Josh Weidenfuss for ESPN believes that Chris Johnson will be the starter. I think it's possible. I mean, I think that's possible, but I think the Cardinals at this point, especially after watching All or Nothing, David Johnson is the guy if he stays healthy. He's definitely the guy, and then Chris Johnson becomes 1B or 2A or however you want to see it. Those two are set. I want to call Andre Ellington a bubble player because I think Stephon Taylor is more likely of more of a lock on the roster because of his specialized play than Andre Ellington. And that's saying something because Ellington has the one thing. He brings dynamic playmaking ability. They don't have that behind him. And he's got starting experience. He's been in the offense. He can do things in the passing game as well. So I don't think, but I think I call him a bubble player simply because what if Kerwin, what if Elijah Penny, they show enough, especially Penny, who's built like a David Johnson. He's got some speed, can catch the ball. If he can do a little bit of what David Johnson can, would you keep him? Because again, Andre Ellington's due $1.7 million. For a guy who's the number three running back and really has no experience playing special teams in the NFL, I make him, he's okay, not full out bubble, but I want to put him there personally.
Yeah, and I think that's completely fair because I think you have to wonder if he's a guy that can, as you said, make a roster and stay healthy the entire time. And he's never proven that he can. So it's fair to ask the question, is he going to finally put it all together and be healthy and be consistent? And so that's difficult, I think, in terms of Ellington. I wrote an article earlier this year, though, that I think he still has a spot on this roster, whether or not we agree. He's the only person that you can really take.
He can be a game changer still.
Well, he's the only person that can do multiple things.
Yes.
Like, he's the only guy that can replace David Johnson and Chris Johnson. So, obviously, David Johnson can, but if he's your starter, then, whatever. But you get what I'm saying. Like, you can't.
Right.
You can't replace him with
anybody else. Take David Johnson out of the lineup and have Andre do exactly the same thing, just to be smaller. Whether you line him up wide, while you have a motion out of the backfield taking care. So yeah, he basically is, and they the BA mentioned it, and we've mentioned it. David Johnson to us is a better Andre Ellington because of the durability. BA said it on All or Nothing. This guy is everything. It does everything that Andre can do, only he's bigger.
Exactly.
So but, now, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say. So I think that's the hard part. Like, you, Kerwin Williams and Stephon Taylor are not dynamic enough to go, yes, cut Andre Ellington, right? Like, but I think. Also, especially like somebody like me, you get trapped in that idea of what Ellington can be as opposed to what he has been. I do get that he is a part-time player, and that's all he is. He's not a lead back. He's not a guy that can carry the ball or touch the ball 250 plus times in a season. But if he's a guy that you get between 80 and 120 touches, I still maintain that I think I'd rather him have, 120 touches.
Than Kerwin Williams?
than Chris Johnson even. Like, if you're going to have kind of a two running back dynamic, I'd rather it be David Johnson and Andre Ellington than watching David Johnson and Chris Johnson, because I just don't think there's enough dynamic ability from Chris still.
And now when you look at the role that actually fits in, they kind of used him for about the second half of the year and part of the middle part of the year. In fact, that's really suited Andre Ellington. You've got the bigger on David Johnson. You've got the maybe shiftier, more experienced Chris Johnson, a little bit heavier. But then you bring Andre Ellington early as like some point in the fourth quarter. You keep him fresh. And then you use him for a play or two in the passing game early in the game. Then you give him three or four or five carries in the fourth quarter. Guess what? Then you went from fast with David Johnson and Chris Johnson to suddenly faster with fresher legs in the fourth quarter. And that's where we saw him bust that big play in Detroit. We saw him bust that big play in Seattle. And I think that would be his perfect role, is to be, he becomes the lightning back in the fourth quarter when the defense has been on the field for a while, and then you just put speed out there.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I have a hard time with these decisions because it's one of those weird things that we've never experienced as Cardinals fans, that we're talking about more than back end of the roster guys.
Right. Not only that, but at running back, in the past it's been struggling to find one, and now we've got three that have starting experience and have had dynamic games.
starters. Here's the thing again, this may sound in contradiction to what I said earlier, but like if you're going to go the Winefuss route and just start Chris Johnson and have him get beat up from game 1 to 10, I'm completely fine with that. And then I would actually understand cutting a Andre Ellington. But if you're going to make David Johnson the focal point, giving him, 20 touches a game, not 20 carries, but 20 touches, those other 10 touches a game, I'd rather them go to Andre Ellington than Chris Johnson, just because I think more can get done in those 10 touches. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Do you think, if you look at Stephon Taylor, is there any way in the world that Kerwin Williams or this Elijah Penny can unseat Stephon for that fourth and final spot on the roster?
I doubt it, and that's just because I don't know who Elijah Penny is. And then Williams has never really been the special teamer that Stephon is. So that's, an unfair comparison. Williams may be a better running back, but he's not a
He's not a better blocker, he's not a better receiver, and he's not a better special teams player.
Yeah, he's just not a better player. Like that's the difference when you're talking about the fourth running back. You don't necessarily need the more talented running back.
You need
the better overall player that can do multiple things for you.
Do you see any surprises as we come to a close of the offensive side of the ball for training camp? Are there any surprises, any surprise moves, any surprise cuts that you see shocking anyone?
The only my sources are telling me or anything like that. Like the only thing I think that could be shocking is if like they traded Michael Floyd. I don't think anything else could be really shocking. Do you?
The only thing I could see perhaps being shocking would be Mathis having too many health issues. He's kind of the linchpin because he's already had two ankle procedures in the off season. And so
Even something that they can control.
Right, right.
I mean, that's just an unfortunate, veteran 30, what is he, 36? Is he 34 or 36? I can't remember.
34, I think, is the age.
But, a guy that's played in, almost 200 NFL games, like, his body's going to break down eventually. You just hope it's not in training camp. Honestly, you would rather it be in training camp than in, game 14. So... No, I guess pick your poison in that sense. But, outside of an injury, like a fluke injury to a starter, I think a trade of Michael Floyd would be – unless the other thing would be a trade to acquire or to bring in a veteran right tackle and not like a, Joe Blow – off
like a Mike Jenkins cornerback version of a right tackle.
Yeah, like an Eric Winston or something of that nature coming in to play right tackle. If you know, I think those are the only two like out there. And I don't think, I think honestly, now that it's talk about it, I think signing a veteran right tackle to start, it would be more reality than like trading Michael Floyd. But I think those are the only two things that could be kind of crazy that could happen on the offensive side of the ball, because it's so boring. I mean, three dynamic wide receivers, you know who your, you know, your running back is for once. And like you said earlier, you have two capable running backs behind him. There's not really a lot of question on the offensive line outside of health, unless DJ Humphries is just terrible, in which case then you whiffed on two offensive linemen in, you know, of your first four draft picks. So, or three technically. So, you know, you look at that, but I just like, it's such a boring offensive unit because it's so good and so kind of in sync. And that's something that, I mean, not a lot of teams get that. Like, not a lot of teams get no turnover and expected growth from everybody but maybe the quarterback. I mean, outside of Carson Palmer, is anybody expecting somebody to fall back to earth? And when I say that about Palmer, I saw a lot of people tweeting out like what his projected stats are going to be, and they're like, you know, 29 to 32 touchdowns. So we're talking, you know, four to seven less touchdowns. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying he's going to, you know, only throw 15 touchdowns this year, but in terms of, you know, projection, you're seeing a lot of David Johnson's going to lead the NFC in total yards from scrimmage, and, you know, John Brown and Michael Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald are going to have 1,000 yards receiving. And, you know, you see a ton of crazy stuff right now. And so it's different and it's kind of enjoyable.
It is. The offensive side of the ball is kind of, you know, a happy boring, because we're talking about back end. We're not worrying about the quarterback position. Really, the front end of every position is set. We already know it because everybody came back. It's just a matter, do they stay healthy? I think the only thing shocking, surprise would be an injury to someone. And if you're a Cardinals fan, you almost come to expect some sort of injury during training camp, because for each of the last five seasons, each of the last five
been the reality.
There has been a starter go down for the season. So we won't talk about it anymore, because that's just one of those things that has happened, and I don't want to talk about it anymore because I don't want it to happen this year. Not this year, please.
That's right. Everybody stays healthy, so we can at least, if they don't win a Super Bowl, we can just bemoan that they didn't win, as opposed to
what if?
Palmer 2 years ago and then Honey Badger last year. Like, you want to be able to be okay with your team not winning. Like, you don't want to say, oh,
if what is? Yes. But, you know, but then we don't have any excuses. So that's about a wrap, unless you've got anything else you want to talk offensively about the training camp preview. You got anything else?
No, I think we covered it all, and I'm excited, you know, to boringly watch Jake Coker and Matt Barkley battle. And that's really, I mean, honestly, like, that
second halves are going to be intriguing, gripping football.
That honestly is what I'm most excited to look forward to. I know, like, a lot of fans are like, "This, you're an idiot," but like that's what I'm looking forward to. Like, it's exciting to me to see young guys battle it out, and especially in kind of a known commodity in Barkley. I know he's not known with the Cardinals, but a known commodity in Barkley, and then an unknown commodity in Coker, and in, you know, it's the ultimate test to see, you know, who gets to continue their dream and who has to go back to the scrap heap and fight for another opportunity.
Or like, here's the surprise. After battling it out, Matt Barkley and Jake Coker, it looks like one of them has the edge, and then they trade for Nick Foles. That would be the shocker.
Yeah, and then they cut Drew Stanton, and we have to listen to his agent. Come false promises again.
There we go. So that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And, well, we're gonna it's short today. We had a short show, a regular length show, so we wrapped up the offense. We'll be back next week right before the start of camp, talking on the defense side of the ball, maybe some other news that comes up until then. But until then, that's Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds and the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. You can find the show on Twitter, RiseUpCRed, or on Facebook. We're also on iTunes or on Blog Talk Radio, and also featured on Sports360AZ.com. Again, thanks for listening, and go Cardinals.
Have a great night, everybody.